Welcome to this brand new episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. This podcast is hosted by Mark van Horek and myself, Elias Krum. We're both from Marketing Guys, a MarTech agency based out of the Netherlands. Welcome to the Marketing Technology Podcast. Today we have Peter Bell, who's been on our podcast before, almost 2 years ago. Peter is a commercial marketing director EMEA at Adobe at the moment. When we spoke 2 years ago, you were with Marketo. So could you introduce yourself, Peter, for the listeners that have not listened to that episode 2 years ago, which I can imagine.
Two years ago.
So please introduce yourself, Peter.
Yeah, no problem. I can't believe it's been 2 years. I promise not to leave it another 2 years. I came to Adobe through Marketo. Marketo was acquired by Adobe about a year and a half ago now. Actually, coming up to 2 years. Time passes very quickly. Yes, it was nearly 2 years ago when we were acquired. So, as you say, I head up the marketing team across Europe for what we call commercial, which is what you may call mid-market. So we have an enterprise sales marketing team, and then we have a mid-market sales and marketing team, and I head up marketing for that. I'm based in England. My team is obviously based across Europe. Predominantly, the hubs are people in Germany, France, and UK, in London. And I specialize in nationalities. The team, although we have hubs of people, we have about a dozen different languages. And for some reason, I seem to have specialized in marketing operations people from Eastern Europe. So all of the marketing operations people are all Eastern European. So an odd fact for you.
Okay, nice. So could you tell us a little about how that transition went from Marketo, which was more like, wasn't a small company, but smaller than let's say larger Adobe, of course. So how did that transition go? And how do you find it like the working environment at the moment? So how did that change for you?
Well, obviously, I mean, first off, everyone thought Marketo was bigger than it was. People regularly compared us with Salesforce, where Salesforce was, say, a 30,000 person company. We were only about 1,000 people, maybe 1,200 in the end. But our brand recognition, you know, our product adoption, way exceeded at the actual size of the company. We always punched above our weight. So going from a 1,200 person company into a 30,000 person company, which is Adobe, was obviously a big transition. Look, I won't say it was perfect, but I will say that myself and my team are all still with Adobe. So we got through the bumps and the lumps that we felt just as we transitioned. And I think, you know, again, our actions speak louder than words. You know, a couple of years on since acquisition, myself and the rest of the team are all still with Adobe. Mm-hmm. During that time, we predominantly, for the first year, very little changed. And then as we were integrated into Adobe, we focused in on a specific customer segment, which is that mid-market, with responsibility for enterprise going elsewhere. And we market the DX, or the Digital Experience Cloud, product into commercial. Now, today that just means Marketo and Magento. In future, it may be more of that product portfolio. We're just determining things like price points, product fit, relevance, and things like that. But so for now, it is Marketo, and then our e-commerce offering, which is Magento, which is another acquisition about 6 months before Marketo. So as well as working in the world of marketing automation, I also work in the world of e-commerce.
Oh, wow, nice. That must be challenging. Because, you know, Adobe as a company offers so many beautiful products for all kinds of customer experiences. So, of course, we know more about those products, but they, you know, throughout the complete customer journey, all kinds of CX platforms, personalization engines, etc. Everything is possible with the products at Adobe, and I'm looking forward for let's say all those, let's say combined products that integrate to each other. And what's an interesting thing, because Adobe is one of the companies that in my view, benefits largely from the corona outbreak, of course. And it's, I don't mean that in a negative way. You know, it's not like we're benefiting from it in a negative manner or whatsoever. But, you know, companies can be made completely
obsolete.
Corona proof using Adobe and Marketo products. Have you seen any, let's say, movements in the markets from the outbreak at your Magento and Marketo part of the business, Peter?
The short answer is yes. And I think, look, as you mentioned, Adobe as a whole has been able to take the opportunity with coronavirus. You can see that in our financial reporting and things in terms of our overall business results. Adobe really has two sides to it. One side, which is the side I think everyone associates with Adobe, which is the creative product suites. Within the digitally signed documents, as opposed to, you know, post them, sign them manually, or take them to a client site and get them signed, has really given a big boost to that whole side of Adobe. And then on the other side of Adobe, which is the side I work in, which is the digital experience, which is all everything from, you know, personalization, analytics, through to commerce, marketing automation, customer journey automation, overall customer experience, then we've also seen opportunity. And let me bring it closer to home. You know, there's a lot of companies who frankly just, you know, put off the shift to digital, whether that be in the commerce sense or in the marketing automation area. If I just take commerce for a moment, there's a very large and very well-known retailer called Primark. They're a fast fashion retailer. They had zero digital presence. They had no e-commerce capability whatsoever, and were just caught completely flat-footed when the high street had to close because of Corona. They were left with literally no sales.
They are familiar for their packed department stores. So
yeah.
Loads of the teenagers in there. Together, so they had a challenge, I can imagine.
So it's just a huge challenge, and you know, I think where and then of course their digital competitors, the Boohoos of the world, obviously benefited from that because people still wanted to shop, and you know, people shop digitally, and we've seen not just food shopping increase in terms of digitally, but you know, fashion and all the other consumer verticals, and you know, will those people return to the high street, or will the people who otherwise weren't particularly heavy digital shoppers, or perhaps weren't digital shoppers at all, continue with their new habit? My personal view is, and I admit I'm biased, I think that e-commerce will continue to see a significant upswing that will be sustained because we've changed people's habits. And once habits are formed, they're difficult to break, and then people tend to stay with them. On the marketing automation side, it's not so clear cut. I think for those customers who are already running a digital, you know, lead to revenue process through marketing automation platforms like Marketo, then I won't say it's been business as usual, because it categorically hasn't. But we run our own business on Marketo, and have done throughout Marketo's history, and then within Adobe, we continue to run our B2B marketing on Marketo. And you know, whilst we've had to make some radical changes very, very quickly, in a sense, it is, you know, Corona hasn't stopped us doing business. We've been able to continue doing business, continue in my case to create pipeline, which is my primary business goal for Adobe. But for those organizations who are still very much rooted in the analog world and had resisted the adoption of digital technologies, bar perhaps building a website, then sadly I've seen, you know, in those verticals, you know, things like manufacturing and others, sadly, we've seen teams furloughed, marketing budgets cut because they're easy just to bring a halt to. And frankly, you know, the trade shows and the in-person activities they tend to focus on were cancelled. So you couldn't attend even if you had the will to attend. So I think it's been more mixed for marketing teams. Whereas for the e-commerce world, it's just, frankly, it's been a really, really great opportunity. And I think it's been an opportunity for a lot of companies who were early adopters or, you know, have been aggressive in their digital transformation.
I can completely confirm that the organizations, the big retailers that had a digital presence, for instance, I know from IKEA that during the lockdown, they went to e-commerce, and they had an e-commerce, but that really boomed. But since they've opened the shops again, the e-commerce still remains high. So it's a positive effect on both ways. But that's an organization that was well equipped for this change. As you've mentioned, there are a lot of companies that are not the case. And so I would like very much to hear what are these companies need to do for the future? Because
the landscape is
changing.
Especially in B2B, there's a lot of companies that are still, we're very much depending on trade shows for lead generation, for example.
Yeah, where are you going to get your leads?
And we hear that from B2B marketers as well. So they have a challenge in, let's say, connecting to the audience, especially as we would say bottom of funnel, because typically those trade shows and events like seminars or these events where people attend to hear new developments, etc., tend to be bottom of funnel events. So even us at, you know, let's say marketing guys, we tend to say, like, if we see people in real life during an event, the chances of winning that deal is way better than when it's just online. So how would you react to that, Peter?
Yeah, look, our situation, unsurprisingly, isn't too different. And let me share, you know, the impact Corona's had on our day-to-day business and our marketing practices. Like you say, you know, trade shows and in-person events have had, you know, they're a big part of the marketing mix, right? I mean, for me, typically, I try to keep it below 40% of spend. Ideally, more closer to 35, but tends to creep up. Because people like doing business with people, and that includes our own sales teams. At the end of the day, business is quite often a personal relationship. It's who you're doing business with, particularly when, you know, perhaps your product line is not that differentiated from that of your competitors. So it's about who you're in business with. Yeah, so for us, Adobe was very conservative, and we probably moved to cancel all in-person events probably 3-4 weeks before everyone else, which meant we moved quickly. We had a lot to cancel. The quarter that would have happened was very, very events heavy. So we had a big replan, and we really had to rethink. Now, as you were touching on, we used events for quite explicit purposes. We have a lead to revenue model, and we're quite intentional about when we run a marketing activity, which part of the funnel is it impacting? And then we have a measure against that, which is appropriate for that stage in the funnel. And we use, you know, trade shows, we tend to use for top of funnel, but we also use them for bottom of funnel, particularly in markets like Germany, where, you know, actually quite often there can be closing events with things like D-Mexico. But the trade shows were gone, so we lost some of our upper funnel. Now, that's quite easy to replace with digital, because predominantly we do most of our upper funnel name acquisition, lead acquisition through digital. That was a fairly easy switch. The harder switch was, how do we replicate in a digital form those lower funnel events that are all as much about building trust and human relationship in order to get the business? And that's been harder, and that's where we've been experimenting most. That's where we've had to take some risks, because, you know, not everything is as simple as a Zoom or a BlueJeans meeting, and you know, how do we do a marketing execution mid and lower funnel? And that's been the big challenge.
Okay, and what have you tried? Because you said it's been some trial and error, maybe. So what have you tried as a replacement for those bottom of funnel events?
Well, I set a challenge to the team. I said, look, as long as it's costing less than 5,000 euros, mm-hmm. I don't mind if it fails. So I give you a license to go, you know, are there new vendors? Have you got ideas? How do you go after this? You know, if you want to go above the 5,000 euros, then let's talk, because it gets costly to fail above that. But I did want to give a reasonable license to experiment. This will make you smile, but the execution that has worked best, particularly for bottom of funnel activity, is alcohol based, which unsurprising, we found a great vendor, and what they basically, it's wine tasting, just conducted via Zoom, but you know, the participants, we sent a branded Adobe box with a welcome letter, small bottles of wine, tasting notes, kind of all the things you need to create an experience. Uh-huh. And then the event was hosted by a sommelier who was the host, who really, for me, actually was the big difference, because he brought energy, he brought obviously expertise and knowledge. And everyone was a little wary at the start. Everybody was kind of a little kind of, is this going to be really awkward? It was actually fantastic. You know, it ended up in the background of one of them, there was one of the participants' wives could be seen in the back, and you know, we invited her to grab a glass and join in. And we would have never met that person's wife. And at the end of it, you know, we all felt a personal connection. So we've rolled that out across different markets. Yes. And that has worked, you know, just really, really well. You know, a format close to that, well, that we have avoided, is anything food based.
Yeah.
Because nobody wants to see someone eat on Zoom, you know, it's just horrible. You know, watching people eat isn't fun. So we've kind of stayed away from the ideas around, you know, beer and a burger and things like that. So that's been very, very successful at the bottom of the funnel. Obviously, we've done a ton of webinars uh-huh. for middle of funnel. We really caught the opportunity. I mean, our registration and attendance for webinars in April and May were three times what they would be normally, because people were literally locked at home. Mm-hmm. Connected to their screen, and we found that people had the time and got less distracted when the time to attend came. Things are normalizing now. I'd say registration and attendance is back to normal, but by moving quickly, we were able to capitalize on the opportunity. But webinars definitely remain the staple. Mm-hmm. And the third, you know, virtual events are still a struggle. The technology platforms are not that great. How do you recreate the larger format kind of trade show type experience? You know, the more of an event online, that remains a point of experimentation.
But Peter, if I listen to this, actually what works very good is being very personalized.
Yes.
And we always said that personalization in the digital space is very important. But it also seems that in order to replicate the live event of the live experience, you can do that with digital by merging the physical experience, sending a wine package, etc. What we do with our lunch and learns, send you the lunch. But the contact is by using digital means. But I'm getting the impression that something very big, the big trade shows, masses, big masses, that's a very big challenge. So I think that companies should very, if they have been relying very heavily on big, it's better, that they have got a very big challenge ahead. So would you think that shifting your focus to more personalized events and personalized actions versus the big masses? Is that the way to go in the coming years?
Yeah, I'm mixed on this. You know, we still need to do demand generation at the top of the funnel. And I think we can do more than just simply, you know, use the usual digital channels of display advertising, paid social, search, etc. I don't really know what it looks like. I know it when I'll see it, but I haven't seen it yet. But I agree with you. I think we are able to recreate the more personal interaction. We are able to recreate the more kind of intimate one-to-few or one-to-one. For marketing, it tends to be, you know, one-to-few. Otherwise, it's just a sales meeting, frankly. But, you know, let's pause for a second around the trade show. I mean, I have a very mixed relationship with trade shows. I think they're expensive, they're tiring, they're noisy. You know, your colleagues who are so keen to attend then disappear after the first hour and never seen again. I'm not a big fan of trade shows. And in researching a blog piece that I published on the Marketo blog probably about 3 weeks ago, I came across a Harvard Business Review article. When I was reading it, I realized that I didn't recognize too many of the company names. And I went back to the top and saw the date. And this thing was dated 1983. And this article could have been written yesterday. I mean, trade shows have not changed in my mind, reading that Harvard Business Review analysis of the trade show, at all in the last 30 years. And, you know, I think this helped me understand my own mixed relationship with trade shows, having invested in them and worked them, you know, throughout my career. I think they're past their sell-by date. I think they've done nothing to innovate. The format hasn't changed. And I don't personally believe that they'll return in the same format. I don't think people are going to be willing to attend, even if their employers allow them to go. And I don't think exhibitors are going to return anytime soon. You know, it could be 5 years until we see anywhere near the sort of experience we would associate with a classic trade show. And I, for one, hope they come back in an innovative way, different, much more focused on the value for the delegate, and changed for the better. But of course, I'm talking about 5 years. I mean, you know, for anyone listening to this, I think we all have to look out, not just at the 5-year horizon, but the 10-year horizon. You know, things are not going to revert, you know, middle of 2021 back to the way they were. So how do we respond to that? And fill those gaps and find new ways of driving, you know, all aspects of the lead generation cycle?
Yeah, well, as you're just pointing out, the answer to that problem hasn't been found yet. You'll recognize it when you see it. But for now, you see a lot of hybrid events, like you mentioned DMXCO. I've just learned that they are, let's say, inviting people from Germany, probably the Netherlands as well, that are within driving distance, can come to visit DMXCO. Whereas it's gonna, the other half of the, or probably 2/3 of visitors usually would have flown in.
Yes.
Can attend the event digitally. But for me, the whole thing about these events, the thing I'm missing, a lot of stuff that has been done on trade shows, and I hate them as much as you do, but you know, a lot of things on trade shows, like displaying products, putting a booth around, you know, getting business cards from people, etc. All that and that stuff that can be replaced digitally. But the thing that is very hard to replace is the networking piece.
Yes,
that's what your wine tasting also puts into effect, basically. Mm-hmm. Later, because you have to get to know people. And reasons I visit, I don't visit a lot of trade shows. A few of them, but like MarTech, the MarTech. What's it, the trade show, there's an East and a West one. I went to the West one in San Jose last year. But my number one reason is networking, not to see all the vendors, because the vendors, you know, I can see online as well. So yeah. when someone can find a solution for that networking piece, I think they have like found the golden egg there, because that's the hard piece, I guess. Do you agree?
Yeah, completely. And it is that piece, and it's you know, there are kind of, as a vendor, there are sort of two reasons. As a vendor and a marketer, there are two reasons I would exhibit at a trade show. One is to meet new people. And I do meet new people, you know, not collect business cards. It's an opportunity to meet people who otherwise maybe weren't in the consideration set. They happen to be walking by your stand, they stop, you can engage with them. The other reason we go is to meet people we already know. These can be lower funnel, or it could be customers, and it could be reinforcing that customer relationship, which is why probably the only thing that's changed on a trade show format is the introduction of meeting rooms on stands, private meeting rooms. And those are the two reasons we go. And it, like you say, it's about people, it's about relationship. And then there's just the general networking, which I think, you know, some trade shows have done a better job at than others. And you're right. That is the golden egg, if you will, as you referred to it. It's how do we replicate that very human aspect of it? And I'm actually quite excited. There are a lot of people who've seen this problem and are currently building, you know, digital platforms. And for me, there's the building in the social aspect, and then the other side is building in the production values. Because for me, what differentiates a webinar versus an online event would be the quality of production. I'm going to take VivaTech as a good positive example. So VivaTech would ordinarily take place in May in Paris. And I love VivaTech partly because it's crazy. You've got L'Oreal next to IBM, who are next to Airbus, you know, all in one hall. It's an incredible representation of industry, old and new. The second is the production values of the entire hall is fantastic. You know, there's no gray shell scheme. There's no boring stands. Everything is beautifully put together. And there's just a sense of excitement, and there's a sense of occasion to it. And then that's reflected in their stages. The stages aren't hidden away in a boring gray room somewhere in a hotel. They're actually probably quite expensively built out in the corners of the main hall. And I highlight VivaTech because it brings high value to production, whether it be, you know, the small kind of stands for startups, or whether it's how the whole space is thought out, or whether it's the video production for the keynotes. And I think for digital events, as well as the human aspect, bringing this sense of production, when to fade in, fade out between speaker and slides, how to get people discussing things naturally when they're on video, you know, to get a real sense of debate or discussion, and for that to come through. I'm really excited about those platforms that are getting built. I've participated in a couple of those events. They're still a little rough around the edges. I haven't seen a golden egg yet, but I think we'll get there. And I can't use the word enough. I'm really excited about it, because it could drive just lasting innovation, which is good for all of us.
Nice. Yeah. So, let's talk a little bit more about what you referred to in an earlier part of the interview, is the measuring for the different stages of the funnel. So you say you explained that you have some measurement in place for every stage of the funnel. So I would be very curious to hear how do you measure for success, for example, like the wine tasting, which you've done online, which is a bottom of funnel event. What kind of measurement instruments, how do you measure for success there?
Very simple. So the first thing we haven't done is change our lead to revenue process. So the lead to revenue process fundamentally, you know, follows the, you know, anyone familiar with marketing automation and the terminology around it, the top of the funnel, we create leads. They might get called either a marketing qualified lead or an automated qualified lead. But this is very much a, and you will have some filters in there, you know, in order to be a marketing qualified lead, it needs to be a company I wish to sell to, because I have a solution for them in a geography I can serve them. And it would be a job title which is relevant to the decision-making process, just as to be very simple about it. And you're looking to capture those people and then nurture buying behaviors, you know, repeat visits to your website, participation in social media posts, the rest. So at the top of the funnel, it's very much around lead acquisition of the right types of people and working for the right types of companies. In the middle of the funnel, it's all about driving further engagement to test if there's genuine buying behavior there. And then the bottom of the funnel, it's very much about conversion into pipeline and also pipeline acceleration. So by conversion to pipeline, it means typically an internal salesperson or has spoken to someone and it's been handed over to a salesperson. So okay, at that point we've got opportunity and has a value in pipeline. So we would use some a bottom of the funnel event like wine tasting for either that last step for conversion between lead to opportunity, or we would quite possibly include at the same time ongoing opportunities that we're looking to close.
Okay.
And we measure success in that way. So my measure of the bottom of the funnel events is fundamentally around pipeline creation and new business bookings.
Well, that's very clear way of measuring. Do you also have like an attribution model in place in which those events are placed?
Yes. So topic of a different hour's discussion in terms of my feelings on first touch, last touch, multi-touch, but we run to a multi-touch model because of course for someone to commit an hour and a half of their time to participate in a wine tasting, they're not going to do that, you know, if they don't know who you are and they've had no prior engagement. There have been other marketing activities which have borne the burden of bringing someone to that point, and they should get credit, which is why I'm a big fan of multi-touch attribution, because, you know, if you just run the analytics and use last touch, the most important thing we do as marketers is that we host a web page which has a contact me form on it or a demo request.
Yeah.
Because that will always be top of the list.
Yep.
Now, the truth is nobody wakes up in the morning and goes, I need a demo of Marketo this morning without any prior thought or engagement or interaction with Marketo. They get to that point as a result of prior interaction, which is why, you know, I measure success at a marketing activity level. Both in the specific, has this generated enough leads? If it's a top of funnel activity, if it's middle of funnel, is this driving leads to marketing qualified? And then for the bottom of the funnel, pipeline influence and pipeline creation. So I measure the activity in the specific, but overall, I would measure things on a multi-touch basis. So if I generate $10 million in pipeline, then which market, if I flip that 90 degrees and look at it, okay, of that 10 million, what in aggregate, which marketing activities drove most of that?
Yeah, so I love the way that's being displayed in Marketo as well. I think it's called the Opportunity Influence Analyzer as well.
It is.
Within Marketo, is that something you recognize or?
Yes, no. I mean, so I use the Opportunity Influence Analyzer is it's a specific report. It's in the core Marketo product and allows you to look back at an opportunity that typically we look at it when we've won new business of some significance, and it allows you to look back over the lifetime of that opportunity and lead from the very beginning. And there's actually a piece of business we closed at the end of last quarter. I ran that exact report. And since September 2018, there had been 177 marketing interactions. Before close, yes. And to the surprise of the salesperson who closed the business, the person who'd interacted with us the most was the CEO of the company.
Nice. That's actually what I love about the Marketo product, these deep insights into those customer journeys. So, and that's really where the product stands out, I guess, from other products. I'm going to put a link in the show notes to an example of one of these reports, so people just can see what I mean, because it's a visual report which really shows you the all the touch points the customer, well, in the end, customer had with you as a company before they basically became a customer. The whole, every touch point, every marketing touch point is visualized. And then you can put like attribution to it as well, multi-touch, of course. That's what I love. So I'll put a link in the show notes to that. Mark, do you have some final questions for Peter, or because otherwise we're gonna round up?
Yeah. I think we have to invite Peter again, not for over 2 years.
No, probably a couple of months.
I think the most important thing is my takeaway here in this episode is that don't build your efforts on assumptions. And that is one assumption, that things will go back to normal again. The assumption that this is a hiccup, but we can we can pick up where we left.
You have to build scenarios, you know. You can feel very strong about it, people say that nothing has happened, things will go back to normal, etc. But that's not a valid assumption to build your business on. So
it's actually very dangerous. If you do that assumption, you are taking enormous risk. And so you have to think in alternatives, and you have to base everything on facts. And that's the other one is, and that's where we went much more in detail with Marketo, and so that all these multi-touch points and the story that Peter just said, well of all these touch moments, it was the CEO.
Yeah.
So those are fact-based things and not your assumption. Exactly. Your gut feeling.
Yep.
I think gut feeling, don't get rid of it, because that's that makes us human. That's the social part, but don't entirely rely on it. It's much more, and you got these tools. And I think that what has happened now with this crisis, it has made a lot of people aware that you need the digital component to proceed to the next phase of the next era.
Especially in lead generation now.
And lead generation is absolutely necessary to have your business continuity proceed.
And I liked the your insight very much, Peter, that you gave about how you run things at Adobe, because, you know, as we know, you are in the marketing automation space, so the digitized world. But you also made clear that you had some, let's say, challenges there, challenges, especially bottom of funnel, how you solved those. And I really loved those and appreciate that you gave those insights. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and I think another thing is a good takeaway is be creative.
Yeah.
Send a bottle of wine.
Yeah,
it works.
A couple of bottles.
A couple of bottles, yeah.
It was, and look, I think I just make a couple of final comments as well. I think one is just on that, you know, creativity and, you know, bring a production to it. We, you know, and I'll pick up on the bottle of wine thing. We didn't actually just send them a bottle of wine. We sent them a tasting kit. Yeah. So we thought about the experience. You know, we thought about how does this feel when you open that box, you know, through to the quality of the sommelier and the host for the meeting, as I described. So think about the production values to it. It doesn't have to cost a huge amount. That was not an expensive execution. And the other thing would be, I just reinforce, you know, I don't believe that things are going to return to the way they were. Now, for anyone who's been early in their digital adoption and aggressive about digital transformation, that probably puts you in a very strong position. And obviously, it's just a question of kind of furthering those investments. For anybody who hasn't, then, you know, it's not a question of if you will make a digital transformation. It's only a case of when will you do it? Because a lot of the in-person marketing activities are not going to come back for some time, and they're probably not going to come back in the same shape and form for quite a long while. And you can't wait for that. And the only positive thing any of us can do is to drive that digital adoption and become a master of it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe to our channel. Also, if you would like to be a guest on the show, or if you know anyone that should be a guest to our show, drop me an email through e.crum@marketingguys.nl or take a look at the website marketingguys.com. Thanks for listening.